in these times, you really got to have yourself centered about what you can do and how you approach things is so important, rather than trying to be influenced what others might be thinking or otherwise, or potential risks or trouble down the road that may or may not even eventuate.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for Real Estate Industry, sales professionals, property managers and leaders. We bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit EliteAgentElevate.com. Now, here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the very best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Joining me today is the managing director for the industrial sector of Colliers International, Malcolm Tyson. With more than 26 years on the front line, he's sold over $6 billion in industrial property and manages one of the largest agency teams in Australia, part of a team that was successful in securing the 2019 Gold Area for Commercial Agency of the Year. So Malcolm, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Samantha.
It's great having you here. You're in the studio here in North Sydney, and you took this as an opportunity to go and sneak up on your team over there. Were they expecting you?
We've got a great team in North Sydney. They've been here for a long period of time. They know what they're doing. They're always good to see.
Absolutely. Well, it's pretty interesting around here in North Sydney with all the construction going on the last few years. Some big people moving in, Channel 9 pretty soon. And
that's right.
That sort of thing. Yeah. As we said, you were the part of the winning team for Colliers being Agency of the Year for the areas last year. That was a massive win. And 2020 has been a very interesting year. Like, it seems like so much has happened since November last year. What's going on in your world?
Everything was rolling along normally in February. Then we had some changes come through. And what's happened since then is we've learned pretty quickly that we have to start to expect changes. I think over the last 15 years, we've had a pretty long, sustainable period of economic growth. That's allowed some predictability to come into the economy and the marketplace. And as a business, we were used to that. And so we were affected by a change, which was obviously then became an economic condition. So then we had to move pretty quickly to deal with that so we can make it through this year in best shape we possibly can.
You just said just a change in an economic condition, obviously referring to COVID-19, but you guys have completely removed that from your vocabulary.
Yeah, we have, because you don't want to dwell on that too much. You've got to deal with it, no doubt. And our number one obligation is the safety and the health of our people. And so we deal with that. Then the next thing is we've got to look after the health and the safety of our business. And so we're not going to be out there to try and solve the virus or create a vaccine. That's not our job. Our job is to deal with the economic conditions. Once we're on the right place and health and safety has been looked after, we got to deal with that and take that head on. That's been our primary focus for 2020.
It's a good approach, actually. That's the control, what you can control approach.
Exactly, yeah.
It's been an interesting year for commercial. I mean, you're sort of more on the industrial than commercial side, but in commercial it's pretty interesting as well, because everyone got sent home to work from home in March this year, and now people are starting to trickle back. What are the trends around work from home that you're seeing at the moment?
Work from home was embraced really well, I think, right across all businesses in the major CBDs of Sydney. And I think most businesses had the technology ready to go. They probably didn't know how to use it, but they learned very quickly how to use it and they adapted well. And it unified a lot of organisations in behind that. So that worked pretty well. But what's happened since then is most businesses are now considering coming back into the CBDs. Colliers have been back in Sydney since 1 July full time. And for us, it was about productivity. We were saying to our teams at that point in time, so you need to operate where you are the most productive. You need to think about what that means and then make that decision. And invariably, that means in an office environment for all the reasons. And so we're around 80, 90% occupancy now in our Sydney offices, and it's working really well for us.
For the people that might be thinking, I love working from home, what do you think the future trend on that is? Do you think that that will continue generally, or do you think that people will start drifting back into the offices for different career reasons?
I think for the latter, the career reasons as much as anything, because working from home gives you the ability of a work-life balance. So that's good. it also is a good place if you want to finish a job or complete a process that's already been set. But if you're looking to unlock or discover new business opportunities or try to innovate in some form or change tactics or strategies, you can't do that from home. And you can't really do it over the screens as well either. There's nothing like being in a group, social distancing, of course, at the moment, yep. but in a group environment where you can encourage each other to think randomly and openly to create new ideas. There'll be some businesses that I think are going to persevere in the work from home experiment. That's what they'll do. And there's others that'll come in town or back into the CBDs in the office environment. And I think you'll get two levels of growth. Those that are in the office environment will grow quicker, I believe, than those that are spread out, separated from each other in the work from home scenario.
Because working in an office does give you certain things that working from home does not, right?
Oh, you got air conditioning.
Yep. It's important in summer.
Peace and quiet. And it's a totally professional environment. A lot of money's been invested into these facilities for the sole purpose of making them as productive as possible. And that's by design, not by accident. And so I think a lot of people now, certainly we're appreciating the thought processes that go into that. And we've seen a spike in productivity straight away from being together.
Yeah, amazing. Last year, you were named Commercial Agency of the Year. What did the win mean for you and the team?
It was a fantastic event. We had three tables there for starters, so we were fully supporting it. The win for us, it capped off a very good year for us. I don't think you can go into an award like this without a good winning culture in the business anyway. And so we had that, and then we applied it to the award and we won the award. So it was a good outcome for the team. A lot of hard work went into it, and it provided us with a level of recognition from outside of Colliers, which was really important.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's yours is such a big business, and commercial is so competitive. It's a really hard award to win amongst some of the other big commercial agencies. And we're going to get into that at the moment, what builds a winning culture, but let's rewind a little bit so that our audience can get to know you a little bit better. How long have you been in real estate, and did you choose real estate or did real estate choose you?
I've been at Colliers now for 26 years and primarily all the way through in industrial real estate. I chose real estate for a couple of reasons. And my options were at the start, whether it be industrial, commercial, retail or other. But the opportunity at that time was industrial, so that's how I went. But the real estate industry as a whole, whether it be residential or otherwise, it's a unique industry that exists. You have a lot of accountability, which I enjoy. With that comes responsibility. But more than anything, you can determine how fast you progress through your career. And it comes down to applying yourself, being disciplined, understanding what people want, and then helping them get it. And if you've got those pieces together, then you can really have a very good career. That appealed to me, as opposed to being governed by some other limitation as to how fast you could move. And I think real estate's really unique in that space. And so that was my number one attraction for getting to the role. I really didn't know much more about it than that. I thought, well, the harder I work, the more I can do. And that was good enough for me at the time.
What was your first job? It was here in North Sydney, wasn't it? I think I read somewhere.
Working in college, first job was working in North Sydney here, where your office is. We're just up the road at North Point. It was dealing with small industrial strata units in Artarmon. And for those that may remember, the Gore Hill Freeway had just opened at that point in time. So it was a big innovation and infrastructure improvement. And that market was doing some things. And I started to learn my way around the industrial markets in that space.
Some people that might be listening who are in residential real estate, what does your day look like in industrial real estate? Like, what are you actually doing between business hours?
Residential and industrial and commercial, there's a lot of similarity. And if you break it down into the basics, a lot of our day is spent around generating new business and identifying new business. That just does not stop. From the day you start, you've got to continue doing it. And so you've got to know that you like talking to people and getting out there and being interested in what they're doing as well. A lot of the time is spent servicing current clients. We've got relationships with some of our long-standing clients that extend back 20, 25 years. So we're very close to them. And spend a lot of time with them to maintain that relationship and transacting deals. Some of the transactions we start may end up coming through years later. So it's a long process. And we say a quick deal is a good deal, but a quick deal could be 18 months. So it's slightly different. I think residential's got a faster tempo. You can move product very, very quickly. That's that'd be very exciting in that space. And some of ours are long burns. We're in there for a long period of time, hand in hand with all the stakeholders.
Yeah, because you don't just decide to move warehouses or something like that.
No, you might have a lead time of 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah, interesting. You just mentioned the Gore Hill Freeway. Are there any other memorable projects that you've worked on during your career?
Yeah, it's quite a lot because it's been quite a while, Samantha, now.
26 years, yeah.
26 years. I spent a lot of time in the Macquarie Park area, and when that was emerging as a precinct, an R&D precinct.
The Optus area?
That's where Optus is now.
Yeah.
Before that, that was known as Centre Court Business Park, and it was just a low-rise industrial warehouse facility, and across the road there would have been horses eating out of old bathtubs. So we're going back some time, but it was an emerging area, and that was one of the first areas that benefited from a collaboration between business and Macquarie University. And it also assisted with a push for decentralisation out of the major CBDs of Sydney CBD and North Sydney CBD as businesses started to move closer to where they staff work. And funnily enough, as we sit here at the moment, that is becoming a really strong pull and attraction for those regional metropolitan markets in Sydney.
I remember Macquarie Park because I used to work for Optus when they were up the road here in 101 Miller.
Okay.
Mark did too. That's kind of where we met years and years and years ago. And I remember them selling it to us like it would be the new Silicon Valley of Sydney, like that.
It was based on Silicon Valley.
Yeah, yeah. And it definitely became all of that, you know, with those campus-style buildings and things like that. So tell us a little bit about your role now.
I've got a couple roles. I run the industrial team for Colliers Australia. We've got over 100 experts in that space nationally, and they just focus purely on industrial real estate, whether it be the sales of industrial real estate, leasing, advisory around that area. And we've got some people on that team now that have been there for 10, 15, 20, 25 years as well. So we all started again. We've grown to a market-leading position now. Then in addition to that role, I have the oversight of the New South Wales business. We've got 700 people now in Sydney and plus some in Newcastle and Wollongong, other locations. So Sydney is the engine room of the Australian economy, I think, by a lot of measures, and it's a very exciting role to be involved with on account of just a dynamic nature that's happening in our marketplace now right across our region.
Yeah, no wonder the North Sydney team were excited to see you this morning. So what's performing best in industrial at the moment?
Well, it's anything that's associated with warehousing and logistics, and which is fundamentally being powered by e-commerce. And I think a lot of people are now understanding what industrial really means, all the other asset classes. People have a general view on retail. They go to a shop and understand retail. I think they do. And same with an office space and hospitals and residential. Industrial was largely unknown because it was out of sight and not thought of, but it's really coming to the forefront now. And any of those large fulfillment centres, distribution centres are really undergoing some very, very strong growth at the moment.
So we're talking things like Amazon and things like that?
All of those companies, and a lot of retail has transitioned from the bricks and mortar through online and delivery straight to the consumer. And I think most people are experiencing that now. The later generation coming through is much more tech savvy. They deal with their most things via their mobile phone, and they can buy and order through that. And e-commerce is really benefiting from that. And it was always going to happen anyway, but the last three quarters of 2020 have probably accelerated that.
Yeah. Again, it's the economic conditions that we're faced with, where the shops were shut for quite some time. And so, of course, you're going to want to order things online. And I know at the time I probably ordered a few more things online than I normally would have too.
Good on you. Thank you.
But it is interesting at the moment. Obviously, expectations are on the increase again in that area as well. Like, as consumers, we expect things to be delivered faster and faster. And I know one of my sort of favourite shops, The Iconic, they're now delivering stuff within the day, and you read every day, you read a new story about Amazon and drones and things like that. Like, take me inside one of the modern warehouses at the moment. What sort of technology are we talking?
It's getting to the point now where the value of the building, the built form, is exceeded by the value of the technology and the automation that sits within it. You'd obviously know that the value of tech stocks, particularly in the US, has increased dramatically throughout this year. And that's allowed for a lot of capital to be invested into research and development in this space. So the way I view it is that the technology that exists today is going to be superseded a lot quicker than what it would have been over the last few years. There's a huge investment going into this space, and you've got the likes of Iconic and Woolworths and Amazon and Aussie Post, for example, all facing a competitive environment. And so therefore they're investing heavily in it. And the technology that's going to come through within the next 3 to 4 or 5 years is going to be extraordinary for the consumer ultimately.
Yeah. I noticed a lot of the shops in, like the retail shops in America, I read Best Buys over there who are sort of like, I don't know, they're like Bingley or something like that, is at the height of lockdown. People would order something on their phone from, say, Bingley in North Sydney. They're not here anymore. They've been knocked down. And I'm ordering this, and then you're allowed to drive up and press the button saying, I'm here, and then the thing gets put straight in your boot. Will we see more of that here?
All those options on the table, and they're trying that in Dubai as well, whereby you had the retail centre at the top, and it could be used as a showroom as much as anything, but the car park was downstairs, which was converted into a pickup area. So you could order online and swing past the shopping centre and have an experience, whether it be a haircut or a coffee or whatever, then jump in your car and pull around and load up and go.
Hands free, yeah. Look, it'd be great if IKEA did that because then I wouldn't have to get lost ever again. But interesting. So let's get back to Colliers for a moment because I could talk about online shopping all day. I'm going to stop myself from doing that. You've been accredited as best employer many, many times over, and you've got incredibly high employee engagement scores. What is the secret sauce that leads to that, do you think?
Well, those surveys have been going for 6-7 years. So every year we encourage our teams to individuals to participate in those surveys because we understand that for us to continue to grow, we've got to keep thinking of new ideas and new ways of doing things. And the best source of those is the fertile minds of us as a broad group. So we get some great ideas and inspirations from within the business, and we action those. We treat it very carefully and seriously. We go through and we've implemented some good initiatives over the time, and it really allows us to keep a really good finger on the pulse of how we're performing and what we may be needing to think about next. Yeah. And so there's good buy-in from the teams, and they're part of it. They own it. And I think it's a really important thing for any business to do.
Yeah, absolutely. But you've got hundreds of employees. Like, some people have got a few employees, and the boss might walk up to you and say, so how do you think we're doing as a business, or how are we going as an employer? I mean, some people are lucky if they get that. But across 100 people, how do you actually measure employee engagement? How do you actually survey them?
Aon Hewitt. So it's independent third party.
Yeah.
That's important. So it's confidential. We don't know who the respondents are, which is very important. So it's completely open. We get the comments. We don't get the identity of the individual. So it's totally third party. We couldn't manage it any other way.
Yeah. And I guess you want real feedback, not just the feedback that someone wants to give you because you're standing in front of them.
That's right. It's not valuable otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. You also named a top LinkedIn company to work for. So this is aside from the Area Award in 2019. How do you develop an attraction brand to get talent to come to you?
We have a view that we need to have a brand which reflects market leadership. And the best way of getting market leadership brand is to have market leaders within your business. So we really focus on either creating or recruiting market leaders, like-minded market leaders, into our business. And we've been working very hard at that for a long time. So we attract a lot of talent into the business, and they prosper, they do well on account of the platform that we offer and the environment that we provide. And I guess that's recognised by LinkedIn as well.
It's interesting that you say you get market leaders. What is Colliers' approach to using social media to attract talent? Because I know social media is a big thing for some residential agencies around the country. Is actually using LinkedIn in that way big for Colliers?
All components of accessing talent is important, including social media, but you've got to have the environment to start off with. You can't try to create something that doesn't exist in the first place. So that starts in our offices primarily, and we'll come back to the offices again, I suppose. So once we've got that, market leaders will come to us, or we create them on account of other means as well, with word of mouth, internal referrals. We may just have people that have feel that our environment is probably more conducive to allowing them to succeed at a faster rate than where they currently are, perhaps. Every business is different. You know, some people are attracted to one over the other.
Yeah. What do you think attracts people to Colliers? Like, what is it about Colliers culture that attracts people in?
Colliers is a little bit unique in our landscape, I believe. One of the reasons we went to Colliers in the very first place was that Colliers was, at that time, was a fairly new company. It was actually started in Australia and has now grown to a global organisation, and today is actually the fastest growing commercial real estate firm in the globe. That allows us to have a large degree of autonomy. Our CEO, who I've worked with for 26 years now, is on the global board. So we're not beholden so much to offshore mandates. It's a little bit unique in that space. The other thing about the business is a lot of us have been there for a long time now. There's a lot of trust involved. We have a good idea what each other are thinking. We're more than happy to contest each other's ideas, which is fantastic, and always happy to accept the outcome as a group. So it's a really good culture. It's one that we defend heavily. We're very collaborative. I think anyone that comes into Colliers will say it is different to other organisations because of the team-based environment, the collaborative nature. We don't have any locked files or anything like that. Everything's very open and accessible to others to share in.
Well, that's nice when you come in that everything's there and that everyone wants to help you succeed.
That's right.
I read somewhere that events and training feature heavily every year for the team as well. How have you changed those programs?
What happened this year is that the market conditions changed. Therefore, our clients changed, our customers changed. Then as it relates to us is that our people were, including all of us here, were all still very good at what we were doing. The problem was the conditions have changed. So what we were doing is probably not so much relevant now. So when you've got a large group of people, whether it be the New South Wales team or the National Industrial team, you've got large amounts of people spread across locations. You've got to get everyone aligned into a new strategy on how to deal with those changes. And training's absolutely critical to that. So training does a couple of things. It helps align people to a common strategy, but also it brings people together in an environment. And this was obviously online and through Teams meetings or Skype or Zoom meetings or whatever they were at the time. We invested heavily in that space, and we were training around resilience, well-being initially, including some sales training as well, and sharing learnings and best practice as we went. Our people have been able to adapt and change and become relevant again to the current market conditions. And when that happens, confidence grows with knowledge and they start to move forward quite quickly.
What's your top tip for engaging a big group of people on Zoom?
Oh, you've got to be honest and authentic, and you can't, jargon and slogans won't work. You've got to say, look, this is serious. This is what we've got to do. You've got to really be clear about the current situation that we're in and what we might be facing. You need to let everyone know that no one has the answers at this point in time, because we don't know what's going to happen a week out, let alone 6 months.
Yeah.
And so what's most important, though, that we all work together, keep our minds open and make decisions without the best information. They're imperfect decisions because we haven't got all the information, but we're doing something, we're moving forward, and learn from that and keep doing that over and over again.
It's great advice. I mean, you know, I've certainly never seen anything like the time that presented itself around March, April, May, and you have to make any decisions better than no decision.
That's right.
Everyone talks about customer experience these days and providing great customer experience. What were some of the examples of great customer experience you guys used to contribute to your awards submission?
When we talk about customer experience, we're really aware that you've got a lot of ways of engaging with the customers at the moment. And for us, there's nothing that replaces the face-to-face contact. Others can help leverage what you're trying to achieve, but you cannot replace that face-to-face contact. And we like to deal with things quickly, keep small problems small, and share any learnings that we have with a transaction or a deal or experience with a particular customer immediately. And that probably underpins our strategy relating to customer experience. And it just builds a deeper level of trust and therefore relationship between the two businesses.
What about innovation? I've been reading a lot about digital twins and things like that in buildings. What sort of innovative things are Colliers working on right now?
Okay, so we're investing heavily in innovation at the moment as a business globally. We have a program called TechStars, which we partner up with our global platform, and that's really looking at startups that could play a major role in a technology sense in the commercial property market globally. That's a big initiative that's been rolling out the last couple of years, but more locally, we're looking closely around how we use data and analyze that. And I think it's a concept that a lot of people are banding around, but not a lot of people are using it or using it effectively. And so there's a lot of learning curve for a lot of people and ourselves included. But I think there's going to be some really good things that are coming out of that in the next 2 to 3 years.
Data's a big one for everyone, I think. There might be some people listening here who are thinking about entering the areas this year. Any tips for a winning submission?
If your business is going really well and you're enjoying some great successes, then just carry that mentality through to this process. It's not easy to win, that's for sure, and you have to give it your best shot, and that's right. That's the way it should be. And I think if you've got a good culture, a winning culture, and it's something that your team really want to work towards, just got to give it a really good red-hot go, would be my advice. And if you don't win it, that's okay. Just learn from it and give it another go the next year, because it's really worthwhile.
Yeah. I'm guessing that there was an amazing sense of pride in the team in your win, but have you been able to use the award in any other ways?
So we celebrated it that night, obviously. We shared it with the business the next day, and then we got back to the work the following day. So that's the way we are at Colliers. Yep. But no, on a serious note, Samantha, we did share it. There's a lot of people that did a lot of hard work to put us in a position where we could win the award. Then there's another group of people that actually collated all of that and did the work to that it was ultimately presented to win it. And it was a fantastic to see the response of those people as they shared in the success. And that's huge recognition for us as a business, because it's not a Colliers award. It's an industry award that's much more important.
Yeah. And I guess it gives particularly the team that, you know, worked on the submission, it's a real team building thing, isn't it?
Oh, it's fantastic, because it's us against them. So we're righto. Yeah. We're going to have a go here.
Like the AFL grand final or something like that.
That's right.
We are number one.
We are number one. We don't mind winning. We just don't like the losing that much.
Yeah. Although, like, I think even to get to the finals of the areas is a big deal as well. So, you know, you can't take anything away from any of that. So our audience love to learn from leaders like you. Any books or podcasts or things like that that have impacted you or that are your favourites?
There's a couple of things on that. Firstly, what you do here I think is fantastic. And
the
Elite Agents podcast series is really good. I'd encourage people at any stage of their career to seek out information such as this. There's a lot of information that comes our way anyway, and not all that's great. It could be through what you read in the newspapers from time to time, or radio or TV. And other social media platforms, obviously, too. So there's a bit of negativity there. So you've got to be careful of that. But it's really about what you seek out. Either seek out people that are successful and learn from them. Seek out podcasts like yours, Lead Agent, because you're learning from successful people there. And some other great self-help books. I think in these times, you really got to have yourself centered about what you can do and how you approach things is so important, rather than trying to be influenced by what others might be thinking or otherwise, or potential risks or trouble down the road that may or may not even eventuate.
It's exhausting.
It's fatiguing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been amazing talking to you today, Malcolm. I've certainly learnt heaps. If there was one thing that you could leave the audience with or one tip, what would it be?
In a period of time, we'll look back at this experience that we're going through in 2020 and saying, well, that was an experience. I'm glad I was there. I learnt a lot. I'm better for it now, because I've learnt some really good habits, And one of the things I may have learned too is that nothing breeds complacency like success. And I think a few businesses may have a bit of complacency in them over the last 3 to 5 years. But we're all emerging out of this a lot sharper and a lot better for business.
I couldn't agree with you more, Malcolm Tyson. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Samantha.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Elevate from Elite Agent. To download your written action guide from this podcast containing extra tips, links and shortcuts, visit eliteagentelevate.com.